Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. We are better than ever, or maybe not. I hope so. I think we are. Yeah, we are better than ever, because tonight we have another one of our cozy little shows. When you want to find out what's going on in the world of sports video games, you go to two places. You go to Pasta Padre and you go to Operation Sports. And as always, I'm happy to have the two drivers behind those shows with us here again tonight. First up, from comfortable in his home in the great state of Washington, from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weed. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Well, personally, I'm not better than ever, Rich, but you always seem to think we are better than ever as a show, so that's great that we're moving forward in that regard. But personally, no, that is not the truth. But I'm always happy to come on and chat on the show, regardless of how I'm feeling.
And not comfortable from the coziness of his home, but from the cold steel gray skies of a under the cold steel gray skies in a very probably uncomfortable, dank, maybe even barren hotel room in Denver, Colorado, the executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
Rich, I'm going to say you cannot knock Denver's weather. It was literally 63 degrees today. It's going to be 64 tomorrow and 70 on Saturday. It is going to be beautiful. No knocking this weather. It's beautiful out here right now.
Wow.
You got mountain snow-topped mountains to the western sky. You got beautiful sunshine. I mean, it's really almost paradise, really.
Hmm.
Except for the smog that kind of overlaid the city this afternoon.
It's going to be 12 degrees here on Sunday. 12.
Yeah. Well, have fun with that. We're getting snow, I think, on Monday, Tuesday back in Oklahoma. So, you know, it's whatever. It was like almost 90 a couple weeks ago, and I kid you not. So it's fun. It's a fun time to live in America. Yeah.
Well, the reason that we are here this week, or not the reason because we're here every week, but what we're here to talk about this week is, to a degree, we are finally getting new information and some in-depth details about the upcoming MLB 15, the show. So a lot to talk about there. Going to hear a lot about how the community is reacting to the first real significant types of information being released about the show. And we're also going to talk about the approach that has quickly become the norm for how this information is sort of distributed and shared in the ever-changing landscape of how not just sports video games, but in many cases, almost all of your AAA games will now, approach when the games come time to launch, how their fans and people interested will find out about it. A lot of interesting stuff to talk about. So for starters, there have been now 2-hour-plus-long streams from the development team behind MLB The Show. The first was last week about gameplay, and the second was this week, which dealt with some details around licensed equipment and with Diamond Dynasty and some other things. So I'll start with you first, Brian Wood. I personally, your overall impressions of the, of the subjects and the content of the two, like I said, hour-plus-long streams from the show development team.
Yeah, as a concept, what I like about the live streams is that it's going direct to consumers, and they tend to hit on subjects that are important to the consumers as opposed to what is going to appeal to a wider audience, whether they did that through, in the past, a big major media site or a trailer, something in that regard. But what I also really appreciate about the live streams is that it puts the developers in the spotlight, which is fairly rare in the gaming industry, at least in the sports gaming industry, where you don't really hear from the developers. I mean, years ago, it was an interesting dynamic when Ian Cummings with Madden was out in public, essentially, in social media and on forums and stuff and interacting. Now it's just social media guys. So I like that it puts the actual developers in the spotlight. As far as the content goes, again, this is really ideal for baseball because people who love baseball, they love the intricacies, they love statistics, they love the little things going on all over the place. And that's what the show excels at. So when you look at gameplay, they rolled through a lot of things that, you know, on a list, on a sheet of paper, to most people, it's not anything thrilling. I mean, I don't think anybody was, you know, jumping up and down when they read the features list. But that doesn't mean they're not appreciated when you're actually playing the game, and they're not, and they're certainly appreciated by fans of the game. So, but at the same time, you have to recognize that this is still a controlled thing for them. They're not going to answer questions from the chat room that they don't want to answer. They're not going to show things that they don't want to show. There's still that sense of, you know, what are they holding back, or what aren't we seeing, or why aren't they answering my question? I'm sure we'll talk about it more later, but I was fascinated in the first stream by the number of people asking about online play, because I thought pretty much everyone who cared about online play had given up on the show already, but apparently not, because like half of the questions in the chat box was about online play, and of course they didn't respond to any of them. So it also can create the sense of disconnect when people aren't responded to, and they start to wonder why aren't they addressing a certain thing. So it's just an interesting dynamic from top to bottom, but I do appreciate it a lot more. I think it's a lot more valuable to people who are interested in the games. Now it's going to, I know I'm kind of going on and on here, but the streams are, they're going to reach, I think, fans, people who are fans already, people who are going to buy the game already, and maybe they become influencers as opposed to them reaching a new segment of consumers and trying to boost sales. So they have to weigh both sides of things, but I think the streams are important, and that's something that's been regular now for a couple of years and probably will continue for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, you definitely hit on some important topics that we're going to get to. Before we do that, Chris Sander, sort of the same question to you personally. Chris Sander, not OS guy, not, you know, anything other than just a person who's interested and ready for the next version of MLB The Show. What are your thoughts on these, you know, pretty significant length and deep detailed streams now that we're getting close to the time where the show is going to be available to us in about 6 weeks?
One of the things I've always enjoyed about the guys at MLB The Show is that, and at SCEA, is that they have always done just such an excellent job of communicating with their customers exactly what is coming. I mean, oftentimes a lot of the features in the fact sheet, I mean, the fact sheet, when it is released, it is a big deal on OS. And, you know, when you hear that, when you see that, and you read down the list, and, you know, there's a bunch of changes, like Brian said, you know, that a lot of them, you know, the average fan is just, yeah, they don't really care. They don't. But the end result is that people who do care see that and see that they care. And then you see these really deep streams and how they go deep into the details of the game. And they are just, I mean, it's something that if you are a hardcore baseball fan, you see these guys and their passion for the game and what they want to do to emulate it on, you know, video game consoles. And it is just, it's infectious at that point. I mean, I think there's a reason why there's such a positive response on Operation Sports, and I'm sure elsewhere, where that these guys are getting a great response because they are passionate about what they do and they show it. They're not afraid to show that to their fans.
So there you go. That's my next question to you. Chris, keeping it with you for a minute, is what has the overall impression been from OS readers? I mean, there is no more hardcore, detail-oriented, demanding sports game audience than the forum posters at Operation Sports. Sounds like the reaction overall to these streams has been positive.
Yeah, you know, today's stream even, about the equipment, people, you know, it's something that a lot of people could sit around and say, yeah, this isn't a big deal, not a big deal, whatever. But in reality, there's a lot of people saying, this is a really big deal. This is awesome. I love this. You know, that's kind of the general consensus. It's either that, or there's kind of the general, you know, this isn't really that big of a deal to me, but it's great that it's in the game. There's no real negative about today's stream. In the gameplay stream, people were hyped up about it. They loved seeing what changes were being made. They loved that there's very deep and detailed explanations about why these guys are doing what they're doing. And I think first off, it just comes from an effective communication strategy and how they are very well and able to communicate to their fans. And it just, it's something that every developer should they should just mimic this in every way, because it is the communication strategy that SCEA has really developed and perfected at this point is something to behold.
And Brian Weed, I same question to you. You put some polls out there. You obviously get a lot of people reacting to the streams. You post your stories about it. What has the reaction to these streams been so far with your readers and with the data that you've gathered?
Yeah, the temperature in the Pasta Padre community and maybe even stretching to social media is different than I think Chris and Operation Sports has seen. Essentially, I think what you have is people have already made up their minds on the show, and they know it's not going to be dramatically different year to year because it hasn't been over the last 7 or 8 years. It's very incremental, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it allows people to establish their opinion on the game, and then it generally probably doesn't change. So there's a lot of people, and it's not negativity about what they've laid out. It's more so what they haven't done. Again, going back to things like online or various features that people have wanted in the game or a revamped commentary, things that they've been waiting for and haven't gotten that just haven't. So what is coming out now is not necessarily changing their minds that they had going in. But and I think you also see that kind of in the polls, because I did a poll in mid-December and I did a poll just within the last week about interest in the features, and they were the results were almost the exact same. And considering the sample size, that was remarkable to me. I mean, leading the way was graphics, improvements to the graphics, which, not terribly thrilling. Number two, not terribly thrilling, improvements to loading times. So people are just kind of entrenched in what they're expecting with the game, and I think that comes from the consistency that the series has had over the years, and that if you like certain things about the show, it's probably going to deliver on that every single year. If you dislike certain things, you're going to probably be disappointed year to year. So I haven't really seen anything to say otherwise in that regard.
You know, the thing that's sort of been starkly apparent to me is that these two streams, 2+ hours of really just, a couple or two or three developers sitting there with their backs to a green screen, and then, the image of the game behind them, it could not be more different than the sizzle reel. In video games, the introduction of a game with a new trailer is such a vital part of the perceived required marketing strategy, at E3 or at, the Video Game Awards or at various events, how you introduce a game with a incredibly carefully crafted sizzle reel, 30, 60 seconds with a couple of big phrases that hover on the screen for a second, and then a couple of still shots, and then all of a sudden you got a bunch of action, and then meanwhile you've got 2+ hours of, a few different guys who are clearly not media types, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, it's just, but it is kind of unorganized. It's certainly informal. It is very casual. It's just so interesting to me to watch these things. And again, these are not the first time. This is not the first time that this has been done. Brian, as you mentioned before the show, the Madden team has done these types of things, as a precursor to release. But now clearly this has become the norm, and it's interesting that there is not a carefully crafted, there's not a necessarily an MC. There's not carefully crafted graphics. They're even being, goofing around with each other, with the graphics under their names. Like at one point, one of the guys had under his name, he showered for today's session. So they're having fun. They're being casual. You could even tell a couple of the guys were kind of nervous. They even mentioned it. So it's a very interesting approach and very anti-video games as far as how these games are marketed. Brian, does that surprise you, or for this kind of game, this kind of market, is that actually, you think, a smarter approach?
Well, I think they have to be creative because in most video games don't come out every year. I mean, there are several franchises that way, but they're generally much more different than a sports game, which is going to be more subtle in their changes generally. And So what they have to do, and like you mentioned, Rich, the traditional way of marketing, they put out a trailer or a press release, and this is what they used to rely on in the past, and it would get people's attention. But now they can go direct to the consumer, and it kind of creates a relationship with the people who are interested in watching and feel involved. It keeps the game relevant. So instead of just a single story on a website every couple weeks because of news, it's something people are talking about for weeks or months leading up to release. And that's something they need now because they have to find a way to demonstrate the differences from year to year. People are more skeptical now. They're certainly, you know, a little more careful with their money. They're not just with the launch issues many games have had and all that. So it's a smarter consumer these days, and they have to respond to that. And I think this is one way to do that.
The other thing that is clear to me is that this seems to be almost a complete recognition by these sports games that they have been ignored or marginalized by most mainstream gaming outlets. Chris Sainer, you mentioned, you know, the day the list comes out or the day that, you know, new information pops up is a big day on OS. It's obviously a big day on Pasta Padre, but barely registers a blip on other sites. I mean, you look at like Polygon, you know, where our friends Sumit and Owen are two staff reporters, are not even a mention about this today. So is this basically an acknowledgement that, okay, you know, this is the best way for us to get our message out instead of trying to, you know, to get a post on a major site? Let's just do our own thing. We know the big sports guys, OS and Pasta Padre, will be on it. Is this the right way to reach our customers, or do you think it's maybe less strategic and it's just like, hey, look, this is kind of what our competitors in the Maddens and the NBAs are doing. Let's just do it this way. I mean, do you think it's strategic or reactionary or perhaps a mix, Chris Sainer?
I think all these things are definitely a mix. I mean, if you look at it strategically, it makes sense to do it this way because, you know, the large sites, for whatever reason, they're either not interested in this content or they know it's not going to get the near as much play. I mean, stuff like this, when you're talking about licensed equipment, there's a lot of people that do not care about this and on those sites like IGN and such. I mean, you're not reaching that audience with information like this. So strategically, they're looking at a site like OS or Pasta Padre, and they see that, I mean, obviously, these are our people, so to speak. I mean, these are our people we want to reach. And then you have your followers on social media, etc. And that's how you get the core audience to it. I mean, I'm sure once you get further along in the cycle and more information is released, you're going to see previews start popping up on those sites with, I guess, larger, more grandiose information, just more big picture stuff, and letting the nitty-gritty stuff be left to sites like Operation Sports and Pasta Padre and their streams, their social media followers. So that makes sense. But then I think there is a little bit of let's just do this because everyone else is doing it, and it's kind of a marketplace expectation now to do this before your game is released. It's kind of and it's easy to do too. It's an easy way to make your customers feel very engaged because obviously people feel engaged. The reactions to these have almost universally been positive. But at the same time, because I mean you're getting to ask questions, etc. But at the same time, it's also a way just to, as a nice reach out, you know, outreach operation to where you can just win hearts and minds that way. And it's a really good way to set the pace and set the tone for the rest of the year and develop. I mean, it's a good way to communicate to your fans again. I mean, I keep saying that, but it is just such a great way to communicate to your fans and just let them feel a part of the development process, even though in reality, all they're doing is just getting that, you know, a couple questions and they're getting a lot of information.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the details. The first stream started with Ramon Russell almost right from the beginning. And Ramon, who was on the show a few weeks ago when MLB The Show won the Press Row Podcast Sports Game of the Year for 2014, came on for a few minutes. And hopefully we'll have him on before the game comes out or after the game comes out to talk some more about it. But anyway, Ramon Russell almost starts off the stream by saying, hey, you know, how's it going? This is the first in a series of streams of MLB 15. MLB 14 was the foundation. MLB 15 is the next step. And, you know, in the future, we've got a huge roadmap of stuff that we want to do. I found it, I mean, we hear it a lot, but it's such a, it was said in such a methodical, understated way. It's refreshing to me, Brian Wiedei, that they don't jump into this stuff, overselling this as this is the game you've always been waiting to play. You know, the baseball is from the future is here. Like, they're like, hey, you know, we had a great game last year. We got a better game this year, and we got a roadmap. It's an interesting way to introduce it that could be taken multiple ways, positively or negatively. How do you approach almost setting the table with that message right off the bat?
I think you know, with the overselling of games, I think, again, times have changed and consumers don't buy into that as much anymore. Everyone seems to be skeptical and they want it proven. And I think one of the things the show has going for it, obviously, is that they've done that over the years. Again, like I said before, what it does well every year. This is a game, and I go back to it in reviews and stuff. I always say, you know, the show is a game you can buy, and you know what you're going to get out of it, and you know what you're not going to get out of it. So there's a level of confidence that people can have going in. And then I also think when you look at the market for baseball, these aren't, you know, hardcore baseball fans aren't going to be bamboozled, really, with terminology and wild claims. It's a very they're confident in what they want and what they see and what they feel they need. So I think it's the right way to go about it, certainly for the market. And I think now you can't get away with that stuff because of overselling games, because people remember that the next year comes around and then they don't believe you, you lose credibility. And, you know, EA has faced that over the years. So it's smart not to go that route.
Chris Sander, were you expecting a battleship to burst into the baseball stadium like right off the bat? I mean, did you think something crazy was going to happen?
Well, you know, honestly, I was expecting, you know, lightning bolts, you know, would be coming out of the baseballs. Really, honestly, I think the Avengers, the Marvel Avengers, need to have a team in MLB The Show just to make this work and, you know, just, you know, to have Thor as the cleanup hitter. You don't want to have Captain America pitching, that sort of thing. You know, you need to have this happening. It's very important to have the Avengers as a team as well, and maybe even have the DC Universe, just Marvel versus DC and MLB The Show with a battleship and aliens, and this is perfect. I think SEEA and EA could totally team up on this, and it could be MVP MLB The Show, Marvel versus DC Universe,
it
just makes sense.
I think you might be onto a little something there, Chris. Although, I mean, Brian, you're the media movie guy. I'm pretty sure those licenses would probably just. I don't think that would quite work out the way it's structured right now.
Yeah, there are, games based on movie properties tend to be awful. So, how about you use them in a creative way like that? I'd be into
good
it.
Point.
Now, Brian. Yeah. Well, thank you for not shooting it down entirely. I was about to jump all over and say, "Now this is a great idea. We can do this. Yes, we can. It can happen."
So once they started getting into it, it was interesting. Again, I mean, all of this was to me just I found it very interesting how they did it. So they started off with again Ramon Russell. And he had this fellow named Patrick Hager, he's a lead programmer, who, you know, sat down next to him, had his pen and paper, and started sort of going over some of the things that they had done from the visual presentation. And right off the bat, they get into things that were extremely granular, and I found it interesting. For example, they approached the sun and the shadows right off the bat. When they said, they didn't just say, yeah, we got new lighting. They said, okay, so when you got, you know, the sun comes at you from a different direction, if it's in April or if it's in July or if it's in September, here's, you know, six different screenshots of what the sky looks like, you know, at various times of day. And here's the color palettes that we use, because white actually isn't white. It's sort of blue. And then with our new lighting and shading, we got the uniforms that are white to look more white, even though we were using these different palettes. Like, they got extremely detailed, almost at programmer level speak. And, you know, again, I just find it fascinating as a guy who's interested in these kind of things, that that's where they chose to go instead of, you know, at the start. And Chris Sander, I mean, you saw that. What would you think about just getting right into details of something like that right off the bat?
You know, those details are incredible. Those are little things, and I'm a ballparks guy too. I absolutely adore ballparks and all those little details within the ballparks, as far as the different sky palettes, the lighting, how it progresses through the year, through the days, etc. I mean, those are little details that someone like myself will pick up on, because and if you've visited MLB ballparks, you know you'll get that feel of the stadium with the lighting and the skies being more accurate, that sort of thing. These are those little touches that you cannot put your finger on, but they are why the game feels better in terms of, you know, how it just feels and visually and such. So, and it's great that they touch on those things, because my goodness, just, you know, other sports games, they don't care about these little things oftentimes. And so I got to give SCEA a lot of credit for just, you know, doing it. I mean, it's something simple, but not as simple as it sounds, but still they aspire to do these things.
Then the next thing that they went into were skin tones of various players, and that could get into some pretty touchy areas if you say the wrong thing, for crying out loud, especially when you're dealing with, you know, African Americans and Latino folks. And they did absolute comparisons between last year and this year to skin tone. They talk about the different, again, the different colors that were used and the different shading and lighting. Brian Weedye, when you're watching that, were you sort of thinking what I was thinking, where this is interesting, but you got to be really careful how you handle subjects like this?
Yeah, that did enter my mind at one point. But I think you can do that without being explicit in certain ways. And what they, over the years, there's always been comparison screenshots from one year to the next. And they did that well in putting one screenshot up against another. And then you make the determination on whether it looks more like the person or not. Again, without putting them up against each other, sometimes it's hard to recognize the changes year to year, especially in terms of graphics or player models or anything of that nature. So, I thought they did a good job of just kind of demonstrating, again, like you said, with the lighting also, how it changes throughout the year and stuff, putting up images and letting people see for themselves instead of just reading it off a fact sheet.
Then one of the next major things that came up was directional hitting. And this is something that I have some concerns about. Not concerns that it's not a good idea or that won't be implemented well, but, you know, I continue to be bedeviled by hitting in the show. I played a game this week of MLB The Show. In fact, I went back and revisited our online franchise where my Dodgers were the only team left in the NLCS, and I played another game, and of course I got shut out again because I'm not very good at hitting. Directional hitting, did you, from what you saw, Chris Sander, did you like it, and how do you think it is going to impact hitting in the show overall?
It's one of those things where I think the first thing the Sony guys have always done is they've done a really good job giving you the option to not complete, they don't completely change the game on you and say, oh, good luck, guys. You still have the option to go back and play in the old styles in a lot of ways. But with the new directional hitting, I mean, that's obviously something that the new options that they have presented, ability to, you know, shape your, I wanted to say shots, but that's the wrong word. Just be able to shape what you're trying to do with the bat. And that's good stuff. But I am concerned. I echo your sentiments, Rich, just about just the general concerns about where this feature is going to go and how it's going to affect the gameplay. And for me personally, just how, just in all honesty, I'm not the best hitter in MLB The Show. I mean, I love pitching. I've been a pitcher my whole life, and that comes easily. But the hitting is just, it doesn't seem like I'm very good at it. And adding more complications to it is going to probably wreck my game on some levels for sure.
Well, they even made mention to it at one point. One of the other developers who sat down said that he had regularly heard, that hitting is too difficult. And again, I'm a huge fan of the show. It's still too difficult for me, right? I mean, I should not get shut out as the video game LA Dodgers with all of the good players they had on that team. Puig and Ramirez and Gonzalez and a whole bunch of guys up and down, Matt Kemp. I mean, they had some quality hitters. And, some of it's my fault. But I've gotten pretty good at being smart at the plate. You know, I don't swing at everything. I make the pitch counts go up. And still, I can barely quite often put two hits together. And I know I'm not the only one. People tell me that all the time. Brian Wiedei, with what you saw with directional hitting, do you think that that will have any impact, positive, negatively, or any at all on you know, the overall at the plate and your ability to make things happen?
Maybe. As with all these options, I mean, I think you have to try them out and see how they fit and see the results.
No, I want an absolute judgment right here without ever actually trying it.
But I was going to say that I think it kind of fits like my approach at the plate too, and for other people. So, you know, going up to the plate and thinking, okay, I want to drive this pitch, I want to pull this pitch, or I'm looking for a pitch in a certain zone. That's how I approach each at bat, anyways. And so, if this rewards me more for having that mindset, and I can take advantage of it, then that'll be great. But like you said, Rich, yeah, hitting is very difficult, and it's. And then they have the, you know, the sliding difficulty scale, which makes, as you get better, makes it even more difficult on you. So I've never really been a fan of that mode of difficulty. But it's tough because, yes, games are always tend to be low scoring. And that's always been, I don't know if it's an issue, but I think if you looked at, certainly when I used to do research on the online play and the statistics, you know, ERAs would be super low. Averages would be super low, so it was very still favored the pitching. We'll have to see. You know, it all depends on how they balance it, though, and they're trying to keep the game as realistic and authentic as possible. But at the same time, that can be hard on people who aren't playing 100 hours a week.
Yeah, or even those who do play a lot. Like I've played, I don't know, Brian, we've easily played more than 100 games, and probably the last game of MLB 14, the show that I'll play, is the game that I got shut out to lose the National League Championship Series. So,
And then there's someone like me, and I know other people too, who are almost give up on the hitting. They're like, okay, I'm going to be a pitcher and road to the show. You know, and that's what I've done for years now, is I've been a pitcher and road to the show. Because it just gets a little tedious and going up to the plate so often and failing so often. But I'm not expecting to bat 400 or 500. Just, you know, 280, 290 would be nice. It's that whole situation with baseball games, and it's not just a show problem. It was pretty much every sim baseball game, which was you score by hitting home runs. You don't score by string. You never score by stringing together hits, right?
Right.
So that's a difficult thing, I think, for them to get to figure out, because if you make it easy to string together hits, you're going to have 15 to 20 run games. But you have to have the ability to do that at times too.
Right. And let's face it too. I mean, we are not in the steroid era. We are in the era of the pitcher. I mean, runs are way down. Strikeouts are way up.
Yeah.
You know, this is a pitching, and Major League Baseball in the real world is all about pitching right now. I mean, there's couple, two or three guys who are hitting 30 homers a year, and the rest are way down. So, you know,
so that's true, Rich. That's true. But that's, we're talking about the top guys generally. You still have to face the bottom of the rotation guys. That's where you really should be beefing your stats up offensively, and it doesn't really happen that way. Like, maybe it's just my opinion, but the dominant, almost every pitcher can seem dominant in this game.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. One of the things that Chris Gill, who's another one of the developers who came on, he said, right when he also mentioned that, you know, he's heard a lot of feedback that hitting's too difficult, that they made it easier this year to recognize the pitches coming in, but I didn't notice any of that. I was looking strongly for some sort of indication as a pitch was coming in, if it's easier to tell if it's a changeup or a curveball versus a two-seamer, four-seamer.
Probably not going to see that on a stream.
Yeah,
with the quality of the stream and the frame rate and stuff like that. But if that's the case, you know, if you can read them, we go back to MVP baseball. A lot of people really loved how the ball would flash a certain color,
yes, absolutely,
depending on your offensive player's statistics, ability to read those pitches.
Yep.
And so you had an advantage with your better hitters.
Yes.
Which is great, because that helped to differentiate, again, your players and help the stats become more realistic. We haven't really seen anything quite like that lately.
One of the other – oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, you know, one way to fix that really is with my idea of the Marvel and DC universe. You can just have each, you know – I mean, this is really simple, guys. Mm-hmm. We can totally pull this off. I mean, being able to read pitches is no problem for Thor. Think about it. So,
well, think about – What's the atmosphere like in Asgard, you know? That's like Colorado, you know?
Well, I mean, it's like Colorado times 10, but at the same time, what if the home run fences in Asgard are like 700 feet down the lines, you know, like 1,000 in center? So, you know, it's comparable in that way.
Basically,
so I don't know.
We want a fantasy baseball game. This is what we've established tonight, is we want some kind of fantasy-based baseball game.
Exactly. That's the moral of tonight's show, talking about simulation baseballs. We actually want a fantasy baseball game.
Yeah.
One of the most bizarre stretches, and I'm going to say it was about 10 or 15 minutes of the first stream, was when there were all of these weird sort of widgets flashing on the screen, and they're moving them up, and they're changing numbers, and they're basically, it wasn't showing the same play over and over again, but like 10 minutes, it was just the same kind of pitch thrown, and then there would be a ball hit to center fielder, and the guy would go get it, and there was no outs being recorded or anything like that. They were talking about the game, but what they were doing was they were playing it in some sort of a debug mode where they had a bunch of automatic things happening. It was bizarre and unsettling to me. At one point, I think the starting pitcher had over 100 pitches thrown, and there were no outs in the first inning. Chris Santa, did you notice that? And
Kershaw's a horse. Kershaw's a horse, man.
I mean, that really kind of – I was trying to figure out what they were trying to accomplish during that main weird stretch there.
Well, honestly – what happened is they were planning on that battleship coming into the ballpark. I mean, I just keep coming to that. And you know, with those stats. No, I think they were trying to show off the outfielders, you know, new speed and trajectories, all that stuff. And to do that, I guess they went into some kind of debug mode. I think my memory's fuzzy on that, but I think it was something like that. And so they were showing some of that stuff. I mean, you could pick up a couple of things like that, which that's kind of an underrated but small addition to the game. It's just how speed on the defensive side is going to affect things. Because, you know, in years past, you could kind of load up your outfield with whoever you wanted. You didn't really have to worry about the defensive implications of the fact you had a bunch of basically overweight guys who could slug it out. You know, you're going to have to think about that. You're going to need some guy who's speedy in the outfield now to make some plays. So I hope, but that's what it sounds like. So, you know, overall pretty good, but it sounds like something like that.
The other thing they were showing off that I remember there was the different ways outfielders can go get the ball, or they might get a bad jump.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think they were showing Puig got a bad jump, but then his athleticism allowed him to recover from it, that kind of stuff. And that every time the ball is hit, it doesn't mean the outfielder or, you know, the infielders are going to react the exact same way, that there's going to be some differentiation there based on ratings and based on, you know, I guess a dice roll of sorts.
Yeah, they definitely spent some time on some incredibly granular stuff around, like you said, how the outfielder will sort of now take an angled approach to it. And then they spent another couple of minutes just in replay mode showing how the third baseman was watching the ball, and instead of just standing there and then, okay, now he's sprinting to the base, which would happen in the past, he would stand there and watch, and then he would sort of meander over to the base more slowly to put himself in position. I mean, these are the kinds of really detailed level things that, had they not been pointed out, I guarantee you I never would have noticed. And, you know, it on one hand, you appreciate that, but then on the other hand, you start to think, you know, wow, could they have potentially invested some time in some other things as opposed to that? And it's not a yes or a no. It's not a good or a bad. It's just it's very interesting, the things that the guys who are living and breathing this, you know, what they're getting after. Some other items that came up during that segment: quick count adjustments have been made for more middle counts, and pitchers always start at 1-1. Brian, you and I and TJ Lowerman in particular have had plenty of debates about quick counts. Do you think the adjustments that are being made are positive, or ultimately will just sort of basically have no real impact on that if that's being used?
Well, it's helpful. It's not going to change my opinion on the feature as a whole. I still won't use it. It still, I think, limits your options. and kind of teaches some bad habits, especially when you go up there and you have to feel like you have to swing, which is what people do anyway in most situations. And why quick counts were kind of installed was because not just for speed to get through a game quicker, but also because people tend to just swing at the first pitch anyway. So, but things like going into a pitcher's at bat and not having two strikes so you can't bunt or you don't want to bunt, that's important. But there's still many other managerial decisions that can come up that aren't necessarily going to be addressed by the changes. But that's the sacrifice that comes with saving 20 minutes in a game. You just have to decide if that's worth it to you as an individual. To me, it's not, but I know there are plenty of people out there who think it is.
Chris Sanner, I am a meter pitcher, the three-tap pitchers. I've never liked pulse pitching. I don't even know what the analog pitching, how that even works. I'm a meter guy, and they mentioned that there had been adjustments to that. Misses hurt more, and closer, better timing helps more. That definitely raised my eyebrows in a curious, not sure I like that kind of a way. What about you?
I'm a meter pitcher guy too. I am a meter guy, and I've always liked meter because it felt like the player's attributes mattered more and less your stick skills, so to speak. Because I want to use the one that most closely, shows that with my number five pitcher is not nearly as good as my number one. So, and meters always seem to do a good job of that. So it worries me that, if you're pitching with someone who is not that good, though, because you can go the other way, and when a guy's not that good and you miss barely, if it's going to go absolutely crazy, that's going to make it to where you don't want to pitch with any of those guys ever.
So let me see. I can't hit, and now I can't pitch anymore. Great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that kind of thing. And that is a big worry. I don't know if we've ever talked about it on this show, but we've written articles on OS about the fact that you can go a little too far on simulation. I know it's crazy to talk. That's crazy talk. I might have just been labeled a heretic and might be kicked out of the sports gaming sim community. But you can go so far on simulation that you actually make the game really almost impossible to play because it's just too hard for the average person. I don't really know the best way to put that other than you can really just make a game unplayable by making it so realistic and so brutally realistic that you so accurately simulate these things that, you miss and you're in trouble. And that's not much fun to the average gamer, much less a guy who loves baseball but can't get that dang meter to go that half second or split second longer or something.
Yeah, and let's face it, when you make, 120 to 130 of those metered pitchers in a 9-inning game, no matter what, you're going to miss some. And we already, we've talked quite a bit about how of probably all of the sports games, the show makes you pay for your mistakes. Mm-hmm. Brian Weedy, when you heard that about the pitching, did that roll through your head? Because that certainly did through mine. I'm like, oh, great. Now I have even less room for that one pitch that's going to lose the game for me.
Well, I can see why you'd be worried about that, because you can't really compensate offensively. If you give up an extra run a game, you're done, Rich. That's the issue, and I'm not really concerned about that. I don't find, over the years that they're going to make a mistake of that nature and just completely wreck kind of that way of pitching or whatever it might be. I think it'll be subtle, and it'll be more in line with what I want to say pulse pitching to me when I've tried it, and I had to stop using it because it literally made me nauseous.
Yeah.
That there's a little more randomness involved with pulse pitching, it feels like. And I think that's what they want to kind of maybe get in there, is that the meter is just a little too, you can be a little too deliberate with it. And I miss pitches with the meter too. I can see why they'd go that direction if they're trying to balance it out maybe with the other settings, especially when they allow you to use all the different settings, the ones you want for online games. They want to make sure they're balanced in that regard.
Yeah, and one thing the show is absolutely the best at in the business is giving you options and settings and sliders that are meaningful, and you can, without a whole lot of effort, really tailor the game to match how you want to play it. So with all of these things, I think it's safe to assume, based upon their history, that all of these will – you'll be able to find your sweet spot, no pun intended, no matter what. All right, so let's move on to the second stream. That happened this week. We're recording this on Thursday. I also found it very interesting. It was different. Ramon Russell was not on this particular one. This was Nick Livingston and Lance Leahy spent quite a bit of time running this particular stream. They started off talking about the universal rewards. Now, again, I'm not sure. Did this really hit home with you? I mean, the thing that it made apparent to me right away is that they're looking to continue, or not continue, they're looking to raise awareness of the kinds of things that Diamond Dynasty can do, because every day that you log in, you get a reward, and then after like nine days, you then get a Diamond Dynasty pack. So it feels to me like, just like all of these other games, and I can't fault them for it, they're trying to funnel you towards the Diamond Dynasty card collecting, you know, online ultimate team slash type of mode. Brian, seems like you felt the same way.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch the stream from today, being Thursday as we record this, on the Universal Rewards and Diamond Dynasty and licensed equipment. But yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea behind these item packs, and they have them in pre-order incentives too, item packs, is to nudge people towards the revenue driver, which they're trying, you know, if you look at some of what they did with Diamond Dynasty, they're trying to form that into more of an ultimate team type mode, as opposed to what they had in place before, which really even Ultimate Team fanatics didn't like. So certainly I think they want to get people there, because it should be – Diamond Dynasty should be a great baseball mode, you know, an Ultimate Team for a baseball. It doesn't get any more natural than that as far as collecting cards and building teams. Yeah. That's a baseball thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it probably would have been EA's, you know, mega – Ultimate Team if that had been the first one, if they had a baseball game at that point. So yeah, but yeah, the item packs and the universal rewards, again, I think it's interesting that they spread it out throughout the game, and yeah, they're definitely trying to encourage people into giving Diamond Dynasty a shot.
And again, I'm not being cynical. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, because they are universal rewards. They do apply across the board. It's just like at the end of every sort of nine steps is that pack. The licensed equipment went next, and I will tell you this. Now, when I first saw the licensed equipment and all the different makers and you know, the bats and the gloves, or the bats and the hitting gloves and the fielding gloves and the shoes and stuff, I automatically was just like, yeah, no big deal. It doesn't matter to me. And I'm not suggesting that watching today's stream completely got me excited to put my Road to the Show player in a certain set of cleats or something like that. But I will say, by looking at all of the different options that you have, and the fact that you can put, you know, cool cleats, you know, real world cleats on your guy, and you can get interesting gloves, and the gloves are really beautiful. I was very impressed with how, you know, when you sort of look at them and look at them from the top and from the bottom and stuff like that. You know, really detailed level stuff. I know it is aimed at a very, very, very specific type of fan of the game. But I will say, the way that it was presented and the depth and the care that clearly going into it, I can certainly appreciate. Again, I don't know that I'll be running into that and going crazy trying to get licensed equipment. But boy, there certainly is, when you see it, it has a lot more impact than when you just read it. Chris Sanner, was that the reaction of the OS community once they really got to sink their teeth into the licensed equipment offerings?
Yeah, you know, they really love – I mean, people, like I said, it's just there's two different sides to this. There's the side that really, really loves this because they love the equipment. They love the authenticity. They love seeing you know, they love seeing these little details come to life in the game. And then there's the other half, you know, I wouldn't say half, but there's this other side, you know, it's a little undercurrent. Then, you know, just kind of shrugs their shoulders and goes on. They're the people that they want to see gameplay, you know, that sort of thing. But really, when you get down to it, when you have all these little details, like the licensed equipment, like the skies and the shadows and the, you know, the different lighting effects in the stadiums, like we talked about earlier, this all adds up to them. It feels more authentic. It feels more like what you see on TV. You can't have a you can't have something that feels real if all these little details are missing. So they're slowly getting those things right. And I think above any other really sports game, they do it better, I think, than anybody else in that regard. And that they really pay attention to little things and try to get them right.
Brian Widow, your thoughts on the equipment?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the licensed equipment to me isn't so much just what they have in there. It's how it's applied to players. And I think this is what there's some dissent about in the community, is that the licensed equipment, all it kind of grants your player, I guess, in Road to the Show.
Yes.
Attribute boosts.
Yep, that's right.
Which is not realistic for a game that is all about realism. But at the same time, I think what that does is it gets people more interested in the in this licensed equipment. They become more aware of it, and certainly that's great for the Nikes of the world and everybody who and all those brands that are in there, because people are going to be attracted to them because they want to upgrade because of these ratings boosts and stuff. But I'm not sure it really fits with their general vision of the game and how that works. But then again, they've had various DLC and stuff where you can boost your players up, so it's not some new venture into in an unrealistic manner. But I can see why some people are a little more hesitant on that aspect of the equipment.
I also had to chuckle when at a certain point in time they were trying to show how the different equipment gave you attribute updates and or attribute upgrades, and the fellas got completely lost in the menus. I was like, oh, I'm not the only one.
That's familiar.
This show just, I mean, it's, again, it's not a criticism, right? I mean, there's just so much happening. Trying to navigate through it all can be terrifying at times. You can easily miss stuff, and they wound up doing that as well. It was funny. Yeah, I'll just say, again, not that I'm a stickler for licensed equipment. I mean, I don't know anything about this stuff, really. But it was interesting to see how you can, you know, how this real world stuff really does add a nifty layer of authenticity that I'll probably peruse for 5 or 10 minutes myself, but I know other people will spend hours looking into. Diamond Dynasty, we touched on it, we'll go a little bit more into it now. Got a significant amount of attention was paid to it today. They went over some of the new aspects of it. I found some of these things, again, to be interesting. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to hop into Diamond Dynasty. I may or may not give it a shot. But it is a major focus of the game, as you would expect it to be. Brian, as you already mentioned, you know, card collecting, baseball cards, and putting a team together, that's almost, you know, how this should have gotten started in the first place. Some key things to it. Number one, when you get a player, there is no expiration. There's no contracts. You get one created dynasty player. So you can create one person, and this one person can play any and every position. And then you literally feed that player a bunch of cards that you don't want to increase their attributes. I found that to be really weird, how you would have a guy that could be your starting shortstop and then come in and close the game. Chrisander, does that make sense to you? And what was the reaction of the OS community when the details about that started becoming apparent?
You know, Diamond Dynasty is one of those things, and just this whole aspect. I guess the best thing to say is there's a big collective shrug. I don't think many people on OS. I think that's a mode that's not built so much for people. Does that make sense? There's not many people on OS that really appreciate that mode right now, and I think that might be a problem with the game itself, period. But just, you know, some people, the reaction's not negative. It's more of a kind of collective shoulder shrug and like, well, we want to hear about franchise mode, or we want, you know, that sort of thing. So I just don't know if the audience is that hardcore. Like, they're not buying into that aspect of the show right now at all, I don't think.
Brian Widow, with Diamond Dynasty being such a focus, at least it got quite a bit of attention today. Do you think that even though they haven't talked about it, that there's some underlying investment in the online infrastructure to support it, because it is an online-driven mode? You can play games against the CPU, but the way to really, you know, the way to really improve your team and to experience the whole thing is through online play.
Well, you would hope so, but then again, we've had reason to believe that for many, many years now, as various features went in, or as people started to demand it, or as, you know, PlayStation added PlayStation Plus and you had to pay to play online. I mean, all these various reasons why people can justify that, you know, now they'll be getting online, right? And there's really no reason to believe it until we see it. They're not even making promises that online's going to be better this year, which can be either a good thing or it could be a very bad sign. I don't know. But I wouldn't certainly anticipate better online. But it makes sense in theory, Rich, that, yeah, if they anticipate Diamond Dynasty to get bigger, if they anticipate that they're going to be collecting a lot of digital revenue, that they have to provide a better online experience. Because without that, it's basically, you know, that mode is certainly not nearly as compelling if all you really feel comfortable doing is playing offline.
Now, we all know it, because it happens every time, that the first day or two MLB The Show is available, the online will be completely broken, nothing will work, you might not even be able to preload the game and play it. Remember all the difficulties that they had last year. But do you think, Chris Sander, does your gut tell you that post-launch, you know, in the first couple of weeks afterwards and getting into the spring and the summer, that MLB 15 The Show on the PlayStation 4 will have a viable online infrastructure? It doesn't need to be fantastic, but will it be viable to where an online franchise can be played, to where Diamond Dynasty games can be played, to just, you know, a game against your friend can be played? Or do you think that MLB The Show's online will continue to be its massive Achilles heel to those who care about online play?
Yes, you know, the online infrastructure for the show has always been, I mean, obviously it is its Achilles heel. It is the thing that this game has never gotten right. And we heard from NBA 2K, I mean, completely separate companies, so it's impossible to compare them exactly, but same kind of claims that it was fixed, that sort of thing. And it was, but it took several days. So I just caution anybody listening, there's probably going to be a mass freak out the first few days. That's those servers are going to, the hamsters are going to be, they're not going to be replaced fast enough, so to speak. I mean, it's just not happening. So,
that's cruel. Those poor hamsters, man.
I know.
Tell you, they work hard.
Well, I'll tell you who would fix this if you had Thor running those servers and then not. I think the launch will be probably problematic as usual. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this year they finally will do it, and it will finally be something decent. Because if they don't do it this year, I just don't know how they could have any credibility ever with their online modes ever again. I think it's like to the point where most people have sworn it off and don't believe it's possible anyways. So then the few that will, to give them another chance, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt, that'll be gone after this year. I couldn't imagine. I know for me personally, I could not imagine giving them the benefit of the doubt again with the online infrastructure. So I think it'll be rough starting and it'll get better later, but I will say that this is a make or break year for that section of that game.
Same question to you, Brian Reed. And then I'm going to follow it up with a slight twist as well. But before I get there, same question to you, Brian.
Oh, a twist. All right. My answer would be no. I mean, you can't assume it's going to be better. Can we hope it'll be better? Yeah, but there's really been, you know, like there's been no indication that it will be, and even if there was promises made about online, no one would believe it because they've done that before. So I hope it'll be sufficient, but there's really, you know, I can't suggest in any way that I'm confident that it will be.
So here's the real question, though, is does it matter? MLB The Show is not a massive seller. It is not its existence is not centered around, at least yet, you know, online. I mean, Madden between Ultimate Team and just, you know, online play, it's a huge part of the game. FIFA, you know, online is a massive part of it, not just Ultimate Team, but also pro clubs and online seasons. You know, NBA 2K to a lesser degree, but, you know, with the park, obviously that's completely online driven, right? Does the show doesn't have anything like that at all. So does it even matter if online is bad to worse for the show? At, I mean, obviously it matters to those of us who want to be in an online franchise. But at a macro level, to the majority of people who play the game, does it even matter? I'll ask you that first, Brian Weedye.
It matters. Well, I guess it depends on what we're measuring here. There are people, and I know some. Personally, I know some who don't buy the game anymore because online is horrible. And I mean, if you're looking at the sales of the show, and this is the reasoning years and years ago was that the amount of money and the investment they'd have to put in to make online good was not worth whatever boost to sales they could potentially get with a functional, well-running online play. And so they're making that determination behind the scenes, but it matters because we don't know how many people don't buy the series because of its online issues. I mean, I get comments on the site all the time about it. I watched that first stream and half the comments were people saying, what about online play? So there are people that care. Now, I can't say whether or not that would take the show from selling, you know, 600,000 copies to a million copies. You know, I doubt that. But there's certainly a sufficient number of people to where they should be concerned about what that means to the series, not just now, but in the future as well.
Same question to you, Chris Sanner. Ultimately, at a macro level, does it matter if MLB The Show's online continues to be poor to worse?
You know, I just don't think so. I think it matters to online gamers. Of course, it matters to them. But on the big macro level, as the question stated, I don't think so. I think I think the majority of gamers, for whatever reason, baseball just isn't a sport that a lot of people have wanted to play online for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they haven't been able to, and they haven't been able to find out how awesome it is. But it doesn't seem like people really care. To me, it doesn't seem like there's that much of a care about it. There's not the same outrage that you get with NBA 2K or Madden if the servers are down and not working. It seems like most people, they are content with playing franchise mode or Road to the Show and calling it good. I don't know if that's a byproduct. I mean, it could easily be a byproduct of the simple fact that people haven't been given the opportunity to play online and experience how awesome that can be as well. So, but at the same time, baseball, a 9-inning game with two people, I mean, you're talking quite a bit of an investment. But I'm telling, just if you're trying to play online franchise or something, I mean, I know you ran into this last year, I think, Rich, where you play a 9-inning game and then you get out and it doesn't count. Well, you know, there's not a worse feeling in the world than something like that. So, you know, at the same time, maybe it's the chicken before the egg thing in that sense, where it maybe online needs to work for there actually to be an audience for that to actually care about it kind of thing.
Yeah, Chris, you said there, you know, that, you know, it doesn't seem important necessarily. But, I mean, what are EA Sports and 2K Sports doing? They're turning their games essentially into online games where the gamer is always online in a sense, and they're involved in an online environment even if they're not necessarily playing online. And that's because they can make money off them that way. So if the show stays with a consumer base that are generally just people who play offline, that's probably not good for their future bottom line and where they go with the series from there. It's just interesting to me to see kind of the different strategies and how these companies are approaching them, because they want – EA and 2K want their consumer base to be online at all times if possible. So But I still advocate, you know, like you said there, Chris, I completely agree. You know, an hour long 9-inning game, it's dreadful to most people, the prospect of that. That's why I still think there should be a shorter experience online, doing extra innings mode where you just play against someone for extra innings. And then, I mean, something like that, it doesn't have to be these hour-long experiences. Why don't they do something creative like that for online where, look, if you're only online 5 to 10 minutes against somebody playing an extra innings game, you're far less likely to run into disconnects and lag and all that. So they can, there's ways around it, and I wish they would do something like that, and they just haven't.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, why, in that sense, Brian, I mean, every sports game could take a cue from that, just as far as minimizing the online experience and doing something great with that.
You remember, Chris, NCAA football had the overtime mode online
the one year.
I don't know why they got rid of it, because that was the most fun thing ever, because you go in, it might be 2 minutes, it might be 5 minutes, but it was always exciting. And then you'd have the tension. You'd have such tension in an extra inning game because you know the first run is probably going to win it.
Yeah, ultimate team games are shorter than your average game as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, just as far as an online experience, what sports games? Let's just face it, what they've been chasing and trying to duplicate is the success first person shooters had. Well, they have this really built in advantage where you can get in and out of a game in 10 minutes. Well, you know, you can't do that in a sports game and play the full experience, but you can still have the tension filled ending of a game somehow and put that in. And there's just there's no better way to do it to where you have to – you get that experience, so to speak. So, yeah, I just think Brian's on to something with that. There's something that – I think that's something that should be heavily considered for online modes, not just in MLB The Show, but just all of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, all sports games.
All right, fellas, well, there's still plenty more to come about MLB The Show. We're about 6 weeks out or so from launch. We'll obviously be spending plenty of time talking about it once it's out, as well as a little bit before. But based upon the streams and all the information that we've gotten so far, Chris Sander, is your community operations sports more excited? Are they the same, or perhaps even a little let down by the information that's come out so far about MLB 15, The Show?
I will say the excitement was pretty minimal about 3 weeks ago, and there's a lot more discussion now. A lot of people are getting excited, and I think people are also just ready to get out of the winter. I know people in Boston are probably just I think any thoughts of a green field with the nice sun beating down on them is probably a good prospect. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of excitement for baseball, and you know, the stock's up for MLB The Show right now. I think the stock's definitely up as far as just groundbreaking new stuff. We haven't really heard too much yet, so I think there's a little bit of anticipation, like what's coming, what's going to be that big feature for MLB The Show that makes me go, yeah, this is definitely worth the upgrade. So I think that's still missing, but there's plenty of time for them to prove that.
Brian Widdeye, what's your feeling on the consensus of your community? Is people more excited? Are they the same level? Or are they a little perhaps underwhelmed by what's come out in the 2+ hours of the streams and the information that's been dropped so far?
Yeah, it's a little different. Operation Sports, you know, with a forum, people tend to feed off each other and respond to each other more than just in a comment section or social media. So, again, like I talked about earlier, it feels flat to me. And not saying that there isn't excitement out there. It's just that everyone who was excited is still excited. People who weren't excited, they probably haven't changed their mind really with anything that's come out. So, but in all, I think it's mostly positive response to what the game's offering up. Certainly what they're showing, the response is positive, but there's still stuff that people desired or hoped would make it into the game or be improved that maybe weren't. So, you know, like you said, there's still time for that to change, but we tend not to get big surprises from the, out of the show year to year. So I'm not sure if it will.
Yeah, well, there's still plenty more to come. And I, for one, am definitely looking forward to the show. Obviously, everybody knows that the show was my second favorite sports game last year. And I think it feels to me like this year will be very similar to last year, where it's kind of a slow burn. Like right out of the gate, there won't be a whole lot, I think, that will like jump out and catch your eye. But the more I played the show, especially when playing it offline, the more I really appreciate it. I have a feeling this is the same kind of thing, because so much is happening underneath the covers that doesn't just jump out and grab you. It's the kind of thing you appreciate over time. But we shall see. All right, gentlemen, thank you as always. I always enjoy these fireside chats, just the three of us. It's always a lot of fun. Chris Sanders, safe travels in your sojourn to the Rocky Mountains. And Brian Widdeye, safe not traveling, just hanging around up there in Seattle. Thank you guys both for coming on. And so for Brian Widdeye from Pasta Padre, Chris Sanders from Operation Sports, I'm Rich Grisham. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Widdeye at Pasta Padre. Polygon Submit Sarkar at Submit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at @_CatBot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve_OS. And of course, me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.